Welcome to Just Pure Laughs, the podcast all about clean comedy. I'm your host, Dan McGowan. I grew up in an entertainment family and have been working as a clean comedian for nearly 30 years. My experience includes comedy clubs, corporate events, cruise ships, community events, military and theater shows, and more. I'm a winner in the Branson Clean Comedy Contest. I've appeared in TV commercials and theater productions and recently filmed a Dry Bar Comedy special that you can find over there at drybarcomedy.com. In many ways, I've seen it all and always seem drawn back to comedy that everyone can enjoy. Clean comedy. So, if you enjoy comedy that is suitable for all ages and just want to learn more about clean comedy, stick around because it's time for Just Pure Laughs. Okay, well, it's so exciting to be here today with a friend of mine, a comic named Morty Stein. Hi, Morty. How are you?
Hi, Dan. How's it going?
You know, it's going well. It's I know that you don't live too far from me. I'm assuming you're as cold as I am with these days we've been having lately.
Yeah, I got the hoodie on today, so it's a little chilly here this morning.
Well, that's what I love about doing these audio-only podcasts. I mean, I could be wearing a mink coat or something, and nobody would know, you know? But, yeah. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me about your comedy journey and all that. So let's jump in, and I want to ask you kind of how you got going. What got you down this comedy path?
Well, I kind of got started by accident. It's something, stand-up was something that I never really was pursuing or looking into. Because of my day job, I used to do a lot of public speaking. So I would get booked to speak at like church groups and civic groups and service organizations like Rotary and Kiwanis from my day job. And I started writing a book about some of the stories that I've encountered in my day job. I worked 35 years as a funeral director.
That's so, right. Yes, yes. Yeah.
So I would get booked to do public speaking at these organizations to talk about pre-planning and veteran services and some of the other benefits that people don't know that are available to them. And so I started writing a book because I tried to inject a little bit of humor because people were kind of freaked out that a funeral director was going to come. And they just basically thought it was just going to be all doom and gloom and dead body stories.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, open with like a couple of dumb dad jokes in the beginning. And sometimes when I get booked, Dan, to do these speeches, sometimes I get like 15 minutes. Sometimes I get like 45 minutes. So it kind of depends. But to elaborate on a lot of the stories that I was telling, incorporating into the talks that I was doing, I started to write a book so I can elaborate more on the stories. And as I was writing the book and the stories, some of the stories got really funny because some of the things that happened in this business were really actually funny. Yeah, it's hard to imagine that. But yeah, some things in this business can be a little bit funny, you know, sometimes by accident. But anyway, as I was writing the book and I found that some of these stories were really funny, I had a friend of mine that I knew from the Chamber of Commerce that owned a comedy club. And I asked him if he had an open mic night so I can read some of these stories and tell some of these stories. And he said, no, they don't. But they had a stand-up 101 class.
Ah!
And he said, you know, and honestly, he goes, you know, honestly, Morty, most of the people that take the class are people like you that do Toastmasters and are public speakers that try to inject humor in their speeches. So I signed up for the class. It was 2 weekends, and then the following weekend, you invite all your family and friends, and you do 5 minutes of material.
Nice.
So I had no plans of doing stand-up. In the class, there was 8 of us. There was 2 people. Or actually 3 people that were aspiring stand-up comedians, and the rest were people like me. So we did the 2 weeks, did the graduation performance, and it was a lot of fun. And I really learned a lot. Then afterwards, some of the students that were becoming aspiring stand-ups said, "Hey, we're going to go hit some open mics. Do you want to come with me?" And I said, "No, this is not something I really wanted to pursue. I just wanted to get some experience and learn how to write some funny material for my speeches." And they said, "Okay, we understand." But then they were actually, every week that they would go, they'd always invite me, and I'd always turn them down. But after a few weeks, I was, you know, was connecting with these people, and I thought, you know, I want to go see how they've advanced in the last few weeks. So I did go to an open mic just to watch them, and they did really good. But as I was watching a lot of these comedians, I was like, you know, I could do that.
Yeah.
I'm funnier than that guy.
Yeah, the path of a comedian. Yeah, I'm as good as you. Yeah,
yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah. I actually went back the following week and actually signed up and went up and did my 5-minute set again. And people had no idea who I was. And so it went over really well. It caught people off guard, and it was great. So I kind of started going a little bit and doing more open mics, and the next thing I know, I'm attending open mics regularly. One comedian actually saw me and booked me on a showcase to perform, so it kind of snowballed from there.
That's really cool. And so how long ago was that? Several years or?
9 years ago.
9 years ago. Okay.
9 years ago.
Now, here's a question for you, because I've always loved this line that you use, and I know you put on those the merchandise that you sell. So tell our listeners how you kind of a little title you've given yourself. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. So I tell people when I do my stand-up that I, you know, retired from my day job, that I'm actually a former funeral director. People call us undertakers. I prefer last responder.
I love that line, last responder. It's just so perfect for what you do. So 9 years ago, you started on this path. That's so cool.
I did, yes.
Yeah, and so I know that, you know, over these past 9 years, you've not just done open mics. You've done these showcases. You've gone out and performed as a feature and a headliner at shows. You know, I don't know how far you travel, but I also know that you are now producing shows, correct?
I do. I started producing shows probably about 2.5, almost 3 years into my comedy journey. I started producing my own stuff.
Yeah, because as you meet other comedians and you want to give them opportunity and create these shows that people can come to and enjoy and all that. So
absolutely. And not only that, but, you know, sometimes you start performing for a while and getting on these showcases, you just don't get booked that much anymore. So you start producing your own shows and you bring in your friends and new up and coming talent. So that way you can get actually more stage time.
Yeah, and I know in conversations we've had, you know, apart from this podcast, that you do tend to lean clean, and you want to talk a little bit about that, like why that decision, why go that way?
Well, I knew that when I wrote my first set for the stand-up 101 class that it was going to be clean, just because I'm an older comedian and an older person, and that's just who I am naturally. I don't really cuss. I don't really tell, you know, dirty stories. It's just not me. It's just not in my personality. And so also when I decided that I was going to start doing this regularly, I made a promise to my family, to my wife and my son, that I wasn't going to do anything that would embarrass them. Sometimes I would tell stories about my wife, but I promised her that I would never disparage her or make her the bad guy. She would always be the hero of the story. And the same thing with my son. I would never embarrass them in any way possible and make me kind of the butt of the joke in the story.
Well, yeah, and that's probably because you don't like sleeping out in the doghouse. You know, you don't want to.
It's pretty uncomfortable on the couch, you know.
Right, yeah, yeah. You enjoy being in the house and in the bed. So, yeah, and we're about in the same age group. And what you said a minute ago was interesting. you know, you and I grew up with watching comedians on, let's say, the Carson, you know, Tonight Show and television stand-up comics who obviously, because of censors and sponsors, there were certain things they couldn't say on television. And so they had to learn how to write creatively so it was still funny. You know what I'm saying?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's just one of the big keys to it, especially in writing clean comedy, is it's funny. You can tell funny stories and you can leave out the cuss words and the vulgarity and stuff and still make it funny and relatable. And that's what it's all about, relating to your audience.
I really like that. That relating is so important. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've been performing and you'll say something and you'll see a husband nudge his wife or, you know, like, yep, that's just like you or the other way around. Yeah. And that, to me, that's a great feeling to know that I've connected with somebody, you know.
I've said
something to make them laugh and lift their spirit or whatever. So when you go about writing comedy, because it's hard, obviously, to write comedy and make it land and make it funny, and that is our calling, you know, is to do that, is to learn how to be quality writers. Do you have a process you follow? Do you have a way that you go about that? Is it just spontaneous, inspirational, or, you know what I mean? Is there a way that you approach this?
The kind of a way that I write my material, and it's changed over the years. I mean, when I first started doing stand-up and first started writing stand-up material, I would write, like, the joke out completely on a legal pad, you know, word for word, lengthy, and then start editing it down from there. Now I just kind of take premises, and I kind of look back on some stories and some things that I want to talk about, and just kind of bullet point it. And so I'll take the bullet points and then kind of write a sentence down and then leave a blank space, a blank line.
Yeah, okay.
And then write another one in a blank space. So I'll take that first line and write that first line, and then the blank space I'll enter like a tagline or a punchline in
there. Yeah, yeah. In the class that I teach, I talk about how we need to be, if you're gonna work clean, that it takes being clever and it takes being creative, and then the obvious other C word is clean.
Right.
You know, but so being creative and clever in a time when we see reels and we see Netflix specials or whatever, where, you know, when a comedian will just for shock value spew stuff out that is pretty vulgar, because people will laugh at that, I think, because it's naughty or it's taboo. And it's not that the joke is funny. It's just that those words they don't hear very often, definitely not where they work. So I guess what I'm asking is, how do you strive for being, like, raising the bar on your creativity or being clever? Is it word choices? Is it, you know, the concepts, the premises that you pick? How do you aim for that?
I aim for the originality and tell stories that are relatable, but catch them off guard.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so I try to catch them off guard, but then I'll tell a story that is something that has happened to me in the past, and that's relatable. People go, oh, yeah. Yeah, that happened to me. Or I've done that before. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I do. What I'm thinking of when I think of the times I've either worked with you or watched you perform, that you do have stories that you share, and that those will be relatable, because even if they're only stories that are original to you, most people can relate to that. You also do things that are word plays. I'm thinking of your Beatles thing, you know,
the Beatles joke. Yes,
right. Yeah, where obviously that's word play, and you know, people tend to like that kind of stuff. So I guess you said it earlier, but it's just not in your makeup. It's not in your DNA, let's say, to go out there and shock everybody with every bad word you can think of. just to for freedom of speech, let's say, you know, to prove that you can say whatever you want on a stage.
No, it's just not me. It's just not in my personality. It's just something that I'm just not comfortable with. And it just kind of, you know, somebody that's a little bit older that's coming across, you know, talking really dirty and nasty, it just kind of seems creepy in a way.
That's kind of funny. Yeah, like you'd be hiding behind a bush with binoculars somewhere or something. Yeah, like that.
Walking on stage with a trench coat, you know.
Right, exactly. Right, yeah. So what opportunities have you had, you know, working as a comedian? I mean, I know you talked about starting in open mics or whatever, but what I'm thinking about are people that are listening to this that might be newbie comedians. So how did those doors open for you? How did you begin getting gigs? Has it been in your plan that you want to get paid for this, or is it just a fun hobby to do and you don't care if you ever get paid or not? You know what I mean?
In the beginning, it was just kind of, you know, I was really having so much fun doing this. And I loved being on stage and making people laugh and make them forget about all the troubles in the world for a few minutes. And that just brought so much joy to me and hopefully joy to them. So I wasn't really in it for the money in the beginning, because I had a day job and I did pretty well. So it wasn't like I was hurting for money. But then as I got more into it a little bit and people started booking me more for like corporate events and some other private events and stuff, and they were offering money, I was just trying to determine what my worth is. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, if I'm good enough that they want to pay me, then yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, one of the things I found early on, because I started later, maybe like you, but I was actually about 40 when I got, well, when I was in my very early 20s, I did it with a buddy, and we were just kind of having fun, going to open mics or whatever. But then I took like a 20-year absence, and I came back and started doing it again, and by that time he had passed away, so I was on my own. And I began to realize if I was going to do this and pursue this, I didn't think that I had the years ahead of me to try to carve out sort of the typical path in clubs where you work your way up, you know, opener to feature to headliner or whatever, and make a couple of $100 on a weekend, you know. And I thought that's when it kind of hit me. If I'm going to do this and try to make money at it, I need to go corporate or cruise ships or other ways that you can actually earn money doing this thing we called stand-up, you know. And so that's what got me thinking, you know, how do you get corporate gigs? What do you do? And you and I were talking a minute ago off the broadcast just about, you know, how do you get these corporate gigs? So what have you found? I mean, for me, I found that HR really wants you to be clean. I hate that word. I wish there was a better word than clean comedy, because it sounds like you're going to come out with making balloon animals or something, you know?
I know, right?
Yeah. I mean, for a while I used classic comedy because that harkened back to what I remember growing up with. Anyway, so what have you found in the world of corporate when you get hired? Do they give you parameters? Do they tell you what you can and can't do? Or how's that work for you?
When they reach out to me, I kind of explain a little bit to them about what I do. And I do explain to them that I'm a clean comedian. And this is what my definition is clean is. I'm not going to cuss. I'm not going to talk about sex. Politics is off the table. Things like that. They're not going to have to worry about me coming up and offending anybody. On occasion, for some corporate events, they'll ask me to like roast the CEO or something like that. That's something I will not do.
Yeah.
I'm pretty adamant.
Why won't you do that if they ask you to roast the CEO?
Because I don't want to make one single person uncomfortable.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. That's good. Yeah. So there are parameters that they give to you, but there's also ones that you have that you bring to the table.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I did one recently where they wanted me to come in early and do like a meet and greet with all the people and have dinner and then MC the event and stuff, and I said, well, you know, the meet and greet, no, I'm not going to do that, but I'll come in and have dinner, and they were going to do like an auction and give away some prizes and stuff before the entertainment, and I agreed to do that.
Yeah, those things are hard. I've done a few of those where they'll have like a meet and greet, then they'll have an auction, then they'll have somebody get up and give a speech, and then they'll give awards, and then the CEO gets up and gives a speech, and now it's your turn to get up. And it's like everybody's, you know, they've eaten, so they're tired, and people are starting to leave the room. And, you know, what began as a 200 member audience is now down to like 50 people, you know, and you still have to do your job and entertain them. And have you encountered things like that, or not so much?
Not so much, but you know, it's like when they ask me to do like the meet and greets, I really don't want to do that because sometimes right before I perform, I just want a few minutes alone to gather my thoughts and kind of get into my mindset and do my process before I walk out and entertain.
Yeah, that's really great. Do you have a pre-performing kind of a routine you go through? You know what I'm asking? Like, do you have to have a quiet place? Do you eat a big meal, a small meal? What, how do you go into a performance?
I eat a small meal to answer that question. I like to have this kind of a quiet place for like 5 minutes where I can like meditate or pray before I go out and just kind of focus on my opening joke. Because what I want to do is I want to go out there and I just want to hit them with my best joke right off the bat and get them right on my side. And then once I get them on my side, it's pretty clear sailing for the next 45 minutes.
I love that you just said that because I feel like that is such a key element for any comedian if they want to be have a successful set is, you know, it's that first impression thing. So what's the first thing they're seeing or hearing when we come out on stage? And so it sounds like you put a lot of value into whatever that opening joke or moment is going to be.
It is. I put a lot of thought in it, and sometimes, you know, I do kind of like a last minute audible and change the opening joke because sometimes before I get into my preparation, I'll kind of walk around the venue a little bit and see what kind of people there. I mean, if it's a predominantly younger group, then I may change some of my material a little bit and leave some stuff out. Or if it's a predominantly older audience, you know, I'm going to leave some stuff out and I'm going to add some stuff that I know that's going to relate to them. So I want to kind of see, you know, who's out there. And it's really important when you first walk out on stage, because I'm sure you've done this too, where you've been actually an audience member and you've walked out or been sitting in the audience and somebody comes on stage and your first thought is, okay, who's this? What's this?
Right,
You know,
exactly.
so like when you're walking out and you and I know that, you know, when we first take those first steps on the stage, they're judging us. They're trying to figure out, you know, who we are and what we are. So you want to hit them right off the bat.
Yeah, you're right. I've noticed as I've looked at old photos of you, or I no, I get where I'm going with this. It's not about your looks. It's about your, sorry, it's about your attire. It's about what you choose to wear on stage. And I know that there was a time, it seems like you had a season where you were only in maybe a jacket and maybe a tie. I don't remember. But then you kind of dress down for, how do you go about deciding what you're going to wear?
Now it kind of depends on the event and the venue and the audience that I'm going to perform for. If it's like a corporate event where I'm getting paid good money to entertain a corporation, then it's either going to be a suit or my dinner jackets. I have a wide assortment of nice dinner
Yes,
jackets
you
with
do.
ties.
You right out of the 50s. I mean, it's so cool to see you in, like, don't you have a pink one or a green one? You probably have a wide variety.
My favorite one is the pink one, but I have a pink and a bright yellow, and I got a purple and a bright yellow, almost like an optic yellow one, and then like more like a tuxedo type. I got several of them.
And what I love about that is you are still dressed up. You know, you are still dressed nicely, but it's off center a bit. You know what I mean? It's off kilter a little bit.
Yes.
So it throws people. It surprises them, I think.
It does. And it catches them off guard, and it's and it does look nice, and I'm dressed professional, and it's just kind of my way of doing my salute to the masters of the comedy era of the 60s.
I know this is going to sound like get off my lawn, but I feel like that sentiment, wisdom of kind of hearkening back to those days is either slipping away or it's gone. It's just, everybody today is, comics today are like jeans, maybe a hoodie, leaning on the mic stand, and that's how they present themselves. It's very lazy looking. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, it's like you said, I've done shows. I didn't put them on, but like I was like doing a set on a showcase, you know, where I would dress kind of nice depending on where it was. If it was like in a bar, you know, I'd dress casual, you know, maybe like, you know, some nice jeans, a Hawaiian shirt or something. But there's people that would, you know, comedians that would come on stage wearing flip-flops, cargo shorts, and a Slayer t-shirt. It's like, really?
Yeah. That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it's and that might be, again, hearkening back to what you and I grew up with, where there was a sense of professionalism to the performing. You're an entertainer. You're a quality entertainer. You're not just some grunt with a mic who a bar is saying, sure, say whatever you want. I don't know. I mean, there's a line there of at what point is that no longer stand-up, you know? At what point are you just anybody who would get up and talk in a bar? You just happen to have written three jokes, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. It's just kind of gone kind of on the wayside. I mean, even if you look back on some of the old clips of like Rodney Dangerfield on The Tonight Show with Carson, he wore a suit.
Right. Yeah. And it was, you know, obviously clever writing, like we talked about
a minute ago.
The writing just had to be, you know, and it takes time. Here's a question for you, because I know that some people listening to this are relatively new to all this. How long would you say it took you to come up with, say, a 30-minute set that you knew landed, you know, that you knew you could go out and the bulk of it would work?
I would say for me, my first solid 30 minutes probably took me probably close to 3 years.
Yeah, and I hope people that are listening aren't discouraged by that, because in those 3 years, no doubt you were, testing out 5-minute sets, 10-minute sets, really honing those to get what we call in the business a nice tight five, you know,
right,
where you know at any moment somebody says, hey, can you get up and do 5 minutes? And you've got that in your pocket. Like you talked about earlier, that 5-minute set you did for that class final, and then you did it again at an open mic or something. So about 3 years. So that's, you know, that's a long time, but it's not unusual. You know, I mean, these comics that we get up and we see them doing their hour-long specials, what people don't realize is that they didn't just hop out of their car outside on the curb and jump in and be funny on the stage. You know, it's taken them years to perfect those bits, to craft those bits, right? Don't you think? Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, most of the comedians that you see that are at the top level that are putting out, you know, Netflix specials every year, I mean, they're working on those jokes for years. I mean, I'm trying to remember, I think it was Nate Bargatze that said on his last special, he did a joke or two jokes that he had been working on for years.
Wow. Yeah. And obviously he's at the top of the game right
now. Of course.
And, you know, yeah. So any major bombs or, you know, depressing issues you've had while performing in the past 9 years?
Yeah, I've had my share of bombs that I think almost everybody has. And for some of the newer comedians that are listening, if you haven't had a bomb yet, just wait, it's coming. But you know, but before I answer that question, you know, here's my advice on bombing. You know, you're eventually it's going to happen and you're going to bomb. But you know what? Embrace it. Don't go home and kick the dog and drink a bottle of scotch. Just, you know, just figure out, okay, you know, what went wrong? You know, maybe I said something wrong. Maybe I left out a word, or maybe I just wasn't into it and I didn't deliver the punchline strong enough. And maybe it was my attitude. But, you know, the one thing for sure, you know, don't ever, ever, ever blame the audience. It's never the audience's fault.
But, yeah, we always say that, and you know, why is that important? Why do you think that's an important thing to think about in this business of ours?
Well, a lot of people think that, you know, I've heard people say that, oh, my set didn't really go so well with just an awful audience. And I'm like, you know, was it really an awful audience? Do you think these people, you know, got off work and spent money and had dinner and paid for babysitters and drove across town and paid a cover and bought appetizers and two drinks to have an awful time?
I love that. That's great. Yeah, which obviously points the fingers back at us. It's our job. And again, it's that mentality of how do we approach it? Do we approach this like it's just some hobby, like, you know, making birdhouses or something? Or do we approach it more as a professional? And if we do, then, you know, like a plumber would never say it's the customer's fault that I didn't plumb the house right, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's our job to do this thing called stand-up comedy and to do it professionally. And do it right so that people remember us as being solid comics.
Absolutely. If you act professionally and you work professionally and you're a professional on and off the stage, you are going to go far. And you're going to go far fast.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, Morty, what do you got coming up you can tell us about? Any shows or showcases or whatever?
A couple things in the next couple of weeks. I got some private corporate stuff that I'm doing for the holidays. But December 27th, Friday, December 27th, I'm headlining a show in Grass Valley at the Gold Vibe Kombuchery. And that's going to be a fun show. And then I've also produced a couple of different shows at Punchline Sacramento. One coming up in February is called OK Boomer. It's all comedians over 50 with a young whippersnapper as our host.
Fun.
And then also in February, we do our show here at Lake Wildwood, which is they're all clean shows. OK Boomer's more kind of PG-13. We got a little bit looser on the restriction for that one. But also a new show that we're doing at Punchline is called The Clean Machine, which is all showcasing clean comedians. And
that is so great. I'm glad that Punchline's doing that. I'm glad you're a part of helping make that happen. That's fantastic.
Right. And a new one that we're starting, we haven't had confirmations on dates, but we got some dates that will be coming up. I'm partnering with another comedian because I'm legally deaf. I lost all my hearing in my left ear and some of the hearing in my right ear. So I'm a hard of hearing, partially deaf comedian. And I'm also partnering with another deaf comedian. And we're putting a show together called Definitely Funny.
I love it.
Which is deaf and hard of hearing comedians, and we're going to be performing shows for the deaf and hard of hearing, where we'll have ASL translators on stage with us interpreting for those people that can't hear.
What a great idea. I love that. And the great thing of being, you know, kind of being hard of hearing, you can't tell when they're booing you. So that's good. You know,
exactly.
You have no idea. You think they're clapping, but they're actually saying, get off, get off. That's great. Well, Morty, it's so great to talk with you. And I'm so glad you spent some time, you know, with me talking about clean comedy and your journey. It's exciting. And how do people find you if they want to figure out how to come to a show or, you know, when you're performing or whatever?
If they want to follow me, I'm on Facebook, not really active on Facebook anymore. I'm more active on Instagram. My Instagram is, oh, Lordy, it's Morty on on Instagram, just search Morty Stein and it'll come up. And then also for show dates and tickets for some of my events, you can go to my website, MortyStein.com, and I'll have more shows updated soon on my website.
Yeah, and you've got clips there, if I recall, on your website.
I do have a demo clip. I'm working on doing several different demo clips, more of a like a 5 minute, a 20 minute, and then a 45 headlining set that I'm going to add to the website.
That's great. Well, Morty, it's been great talking with you. Do you have any last word of wisdom to give our listeners, or are you kind of talked out?
No, I'm just saying, if you write clean, and if you want to be a clean comedian, I mean, there's more opportunities for you. And it's like somebody said, one of the big things for me, somebody said the biggest difference between club work and corporate work is just add a zero to your paycheck.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And boy, that is really true. Well, Marty, it's been great having you with us, and I hope you have a great rest of the day. This has been Just Pure Laughs with Morty Stein, clean comedian, and he told you how to get a hold of him, and that's great. Morty, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dan. It was a pleasure, as always.
And remember, you can find the Just Pure Laughs podcast anywhere that you find other fine podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe. Hey, join us next time, where we will have an interview with another comedian who leans clean. See you then.